Hi, Stephen. You have a call today with John Bird.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this podcast. Thank you for listening. Today, I'm very happy. I have a special guest here with me. His name is John Bird, and John lives in Sydney, Australia. He's the CEO of VML YNR Australia. Before that, he was the global head of retail for the same organization. And John and I met for the very first time in New York when I was there with a group of entrepreneurs. When we were discovering the future of retail, we had the pleasure to listen to John, his expertise on the future of retail. We met again in San Francisco doing some store safaris, catching up about retail. And today, John lives in Sydney as a native Australian and is very happy to be back there. So welcome in this podcast, John.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here. And we've shared some time in a couple of great cities, and hopefully we'll get the chance to do it again sometime in Sydney.
Yeah, I would love that. I was in Sydney with my family last year in July for 4 days. Then we did a big tour in Australia, and we really enjoyed it. I think Australians are like the most natural, informal, friendly people that I have ever met. So it was a real pleasure to tour in your country.
Excellent. Well, as soon as the borders open, come on down.
I would love to. John, I know you as an analyst and an expert, a man with a vision about what is happening in the world of retail. Around the world, the last few months have been pretty intense for the retail market. How did you look at the last few months? What are your observations?
Yeah, I think it has been enormously challenging for retail, and an enormously transformative time. And as a futurist yourself, I'm sure you've observed what a lot of people observed, and that is that a lot of change has been compressed into an extraordinarily short amount of time. A lot of change, you know, from a behavior point of view, which has been influenced, of course, by coronavirus and COVID-19, and the fact that people have been locked down in their homes, remote working, having to pick up on digital technologies, just forced really to change. And I think that's been absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it's had, and it has had an extraordinary effect on retail. I mean, in very basic ways, that we all know, but I still think the statistics are incredible. Like, for instance, e-commerce penetration in the States going from 16% pre-COVID to 27% post-COVID. In the US, in Australia, an even more dramatic uptick, because I think we were here a little slower on the online commerce bandwagon, but going from 10% pre-COVID to 24% today. Wow. So, you know, a massive uplift. And I think that's been really, really interesting, interesting to see. You know, and we've seen other changes too. You know, I've spent some time with some like-minded individuals down in Australia, and also talking with people like David Roth, who heads up WPP, the store, mm-hmm. Globally. Yeah. I'm sure you know David.
Yes.
And we've kind of clustered insights and opportunities for retail, kind of what's been going on into three different areas.
Okay.
What we've called the hands, heads, and hearts of retail.
Okay. Does that mean?
Well, I think some of it's what's happening now, and some of it's perhaps, you know, what we might see going into the future. Well, it comes down to three different things. So, from a hands point of view, you know, how physical retail will be different, particularly around touch. Mm-hmm. From a heads perspective, how the digital smarts around retail are rapidly changing. And from a heart's perspective, how the emotions around shopping and consumption are shifting.
Okay.
So that's what, you know, those are the kind of three little areas that we've looked at. And I think, you know, if you want to break them down in terms of hands, you know, and think about touch. Mm-hmm. For the last few years, and Stephen, you and I saw this when we were in San Francisco doing the store tours and listening to presentations from different individuals. But for the last few years, we've all heard that experience is going to be the savior of physical retail. It was all about a hands-on experience.
Right.
But in a post-COVID world, the physicality of retail will be very different because customers will want to keep their distance and simply not touch as much.
Right.
You know, I think we're past this point, but you would have experienced this in the heart or in the eye of the storm from a coronavirus point of view, when it was really about mission shopping. You know, if you needed to get groceries, where you'd take a deep breath,
yeah,
you know, line up, get in, sanitize your hands, shop to a list, and then get out.
Yeah, it was like a mission that you had to complete. I always felt that I was leaving on a mission, and I had to make sure I could come back safely to my house.
Yeah, it was like that, which is really odd. And I know that's backing off now, but I think mm-hmm. some of that, certainly concern about hygiene and wanting to be safe in a physical environment, will stay. And we've seen, you know, right around the world, retail respond with zero touch, click and collect, for instance. There's a pet supplies retailer here called Pet Barn, and they were very quick to introduce that service. Lots of retailers have. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting with that particular retailer, though, is that they have a vet service, and they introduced WebVet, which was the pet equivalent of telehealth. So instead of having to go into the vet, you could jump online, talk to a vet. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, but what does that mean for retailers? I mean, I agree. We talked about experiences. We went to beautiful stores that had all the coolest things ever.
Yes.
What if we wake up in a world where people don't touch items anymore in a store? What is then the pure usage of a store a logistics center to facilitate more remote commerce? Is that the future of a store, or what do people with a store have to do then?
Well, I think a couple of things will happen. And, you know, to use that William Gibson line, the future's already here, it's just unevenly distributed, which I love that because I think it's a really, really good observation. But, you know, you can look at experiences in the US like Amazon Go and where they're developing that technology, and we're seeing that in all sorts of places around the world, where you cut out the physical interaction with people entirely. Mm-hmm. So you're using your mobile app to enter the store, you're picking up the items you want, and then you're walking out and the store then sends you your receipt moments later. Now, obviously, you're still picking products off the shelf, so it's not entirely without mm-hmm. without touch, but you're reducing a lot of the physical interaction. And, you know, for instance, here in Australia, Woolworths, which is the leading supermarket retailer, is talking about rolling out similar technology. So I think that kind of will expand. And the other one, of course, which I think is a really interesting example of where things are going, is Alibaba's Hamas supermarkets in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there.
Not just in Shanghai, you know, across China.
Yeah.
And as you say, those are places to shop, but they are also distribution and logistics centers. Mm-hmm. which is centered on a small local population. I mean, they really serve an area about 3 kilometers around the store, or 3 to 5 kilometers around the store. And you can only interact with the store on your mobile phone through the Alibaba app, but you can interact in any way which is appropriate to you. So if you are in the store, you can scan any item and get the complete backstory, all the provenance of that particular item, which I think, again, in a post-COVID world is really good, because that's about food transparency, about knowing where the item was grown, how it was raised, how it was processed, how long it was from when it was in the ground to in the store, or all of those kind of things, whether there are any pesticides used, how it was packaged. So you can get all that kind of information straight off the shelf. Mm-hmm. You can order food to be prepared for you there in the store.
Yeah.
So you can interact in a physical sense in the store. And as you know, in the cafe in Hamar, you order through your mobile phone and your food is delivered via robots. So again, right. That's coming out the physicality.
Yeah. Okay.
But then even more so, though, with that one at home, you can, and the Alibaba people were telling me this when I went there, and I'm sure you've had the same experience, that people start the interaction with those Alibaba supermarkets physically going to the store using their mobile phone, but very quickly are trained to interact with the store from home and order items and have them delivered, which are guaranteed to be delivered within 29 minutes in a 3 kilometer radius.
Right. I was very surprised when I was first visiting them in Shanghai. It's a beautiful store. The products are really fresh. It's like Whole Foods kind of style that they presented. But hardly any customers. I mean, the only thing that we saw were employees of those stores running around like crazy. And I really mean running and scanning all kind of products, putting them in those bags. Then the bags go on some sort of an elevator system all the way up to the ceiling, all the way down to the other side of the store, going back down, and then a large fleet of electrical small motorcycles are ready for that delivery. It was amazing to see a beautiful store hardly without any consumers, but working as some sort of an efficient logistics center. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, that is a really interesting possible example of where things are going. So I think we'll see that. I mean, the one where I think will be really interesting is what happens with fashion.
Yeah, that would be my next question. What are we going to do with fashion then? I mean, there you have to touch stuff if you want to buy it.
Yeah, exactly right. And what do you do with change rooms? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you make those safe and hygienic environments? Or, you know, is it a more virtual experience in the store? I know that I think it's North Face from memory doing some really interesting things in terms of digital interaction in the store in experience centers, which are largely digitally driven in places like Toronto, where there is very little product in the store apart from demonstrating that the power of that product in, you know, for instance, a very cold environment, because North Face is outdoor gear, but you can, you know, try on an item virtually within the store. I don't know though whether that's actually going to be enough. You know, does that then say, okay, well the there needs to be an entirely new system developed for how you interact with fashion in a physical environment.
But a question that I have, I follow these thoughts. I see it happening. But sometimes I wonder how long does this crisis need to last to make sure that these behaviors and these attitudes are permanent. I mean, in Europe, in Australia, you're in the safe zone. In Europe, we're at the end of the curve. Imagine that we would have a vaccine faster than what we hope for, or imagine that a second wave is much lighter than what we had now, so that, let's say, the worst is behind us. Do you think that we will permanently go to these new behaviors, or do you think it will go back to the way it was? And do we need a long-lasting, let's say, 12, 18 months situation like this, that it's dangerous to move to a world where these new behaviors are permanent? What's your view on that?
Well, I think it's a bit like a pendulum, that the pendulum swings a fair way, but it will come back, not to the center, but it'll come back a little bit. Because I agree with you, and I've thought about this as well, that... the flu of 100 years ago, the pandemic of 1919 to 1920, had a similar effect upon behaviors at that time, in terms of needing to social distance and all those kinds of things. But pretty obviously, by the 20s or some way into the 20s, those behaviours had swung back the other way, or back to normal again. Having said that, if you look at the SARS epidemic, that really was the birth of digital commerce in lots of ways in China.
Okay.
Really accelerated the growth of digital, and was kind of the birth of, what came out of that for Alibaba, for instance, was the beginning of Taobao, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, that was an inflection point where business responded, and then that did drive, a permanent change in the way that that people shopped in China.
Right.
So I think there will be changes. Somebody was saying to me today that, and I'm not sure exactly what the source was, but that it takes 66 days to develop a habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, if you look at what we started out talking about, which was the acceleration of take-up of e-commerce, in Australia it was a period of a couple of months, and I think that... and in a lot of different parts around the world, which does give you enough time to develop a new habit. Mm-hmm. So I think the trend to e-commerce, the trend to less physical footprint for stores, And that was happening pre-COVID anyway. All that's happened is that's been accelerated. I think those things will continue. The one that I find fascinating, I'd be interested in your opinion on this too, is I talked initially about hands, heads, and hearts. And hearts is about how the emotions around shopping and consumption are shifting. Mm-hmm. And look at some of the behaviours around COVID. Consumers becoming more internally focused around the home, family, wellness, all of that, and a rise in mindful consumption, really considering what you purchase, where it came from, those kind of things. I think that has been accelerated too, and how far that runs, I think, will be interesting. What's your perspective?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, I think we're going to see a flip in what consumers want. In the past 10 years, the buzzword in marketing was authenticity. And some brands thought that if you add like founded in 1889, that was suddenly you were authentic. So that was a little bit funny. But I think that we're going to see a flip from a focus on authenticity to a focus on responsibility. Not in a fluffy kind of way where you make a PowerPoint and then think that you save the world, but actually looking at society, how you can add value and help to solve concrete issues in certain communities. And I think that consumers will be more open to that. I think that's mm-hmm. going to become a larger part in deciding which products and brands that you buy from. And, you know, if I look to 2030 and think about what could be successful brands, I work with three elements that they're not exactly the same as what you mentioned, but I think there's overlap. I work with the ultimate convenience where you need digital, you know, to help us make life easier and safer, basically. Then you have I call that partner in life philosophy, which is about empathy, which is about how can you help people in a broader way than just selling them a product. If, for instance, if you're a food retailer, it's not just about selling me some fruit, vegetables, and prepacked food. It's also about how can you help me in living a healthier life? How can you facilitate that? And on top of that, how can you, and I say this between brackets, but how can you help to save the world? And how can you contribute to a better society as a brand? Because you've probably also followed the Edelman Trust Barometer, the research that they do every year. You see that consumers actually are more looking towards companies and company leaders to solve challenges in society than that they trust in governments to do it. So I'm with you. I think that will increase in the next few years, that mindful consumption patterns will become more important, I think. So I agree with that.
And perhaps, again, these were trends that were in the ether already.
Yeah.
They've just been accelerated.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Is that what you mean with the heart part of your three dimensions?
Yes. So hearts is about the emotions around shopping and consumption. So it is about a change in focus. I mean, the other part of that too is looking locally. And I'm mm-hmm. noticing that just in my local community. And I'm noticing I'm doing it myself, saying that, you know, if I'm going to live in this community, I've got to support this community, and I should be looking at local retailers, local merchants, because that builds a sense of community. Perhaps also arise at two ends of the spectrum. Of course, we will see the Amazons. The eBays, the Walmarts, the large retailers strengthen, and we're seeing that already. Yes. But I think at the other end of the spectrum too, we'll see really interesting small businesses, small retailers, that sometimes, you know, purely focused in a local community. Yes. I think that could be another thing that could happen in that. The third one, and that's part of saving the world. You know, saving the world is also saving your local community, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, a follow-up question on that, and I agree with you. We have a store here that is 500 meters away from where I live. I live in a very small little town in Belgium. We have a beautiful flower store, but they also make their own strawberries, and they make strawberry jam. And I can tell you, this is the best strawberry jam in the world that is just made here 500 meters away from my house. And I love to discover these local products and support that and promote that. And I agree, that's part of our responsibility. And that's what we like as consumers. You fall more in love with homemade strawberry jam than with the perfect transactional power of Amazon, in my opinion. But, you know, sometimes you need Amazon because it's just convenient. It's the fastest and the easiest way to get stuff. And they're doing an outstanding job with that. But I don't think those two have to fight with each other. The only worries I have is for people who are, or companies that are not, let's say, the top class digital mm-hmm. players and the local communities. There's a whole group of companies that doesn't fit in either of those two, that are like mid-sized retailers that are the typical names that you see in the shopping streets, but that you don't have an emotional connection with, that are not outstanding with digital. I'm a little bit worried about those.
Yeah, you know, that goes all the way up to players like JCPenney. Yes. You know, in the United States. So, you know, anybody who is stuck in the middle, mm-hmm. Who is not offering an outstanding, easy, fast, well-priced customer experience at one end, or at the other end, an engaging, interesting personal experience at the other. Well, I mean, what's your reason for being? I don't know that you really have a reason for being in the long term, post-COVID.
No, I agree. That's going to be a big challenge. Their differentiation used to be location, maybe, but that is decreasing in relevance. So it's if you don't have anything to add towards the consumer that is in line with the new expectations, that's going to be a tough nut to crack, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you make too. That in the old days, retail was about access. Mm-hmm. And so if you were represented in 1,000 shopping malls across the US with exactly the same store, that was good enough.
Yeah.
And it's just not good enough anymore.
No. And we've been talking about this for 5 or 6 years, but now we have this digital sprint and this healthcare sprint that is just changing the speed of change in this evolution, I think.
Yeah. Another thing will be really interesting is how tourism may change as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is an interesting thing too. I don't know whether you're finding this in Belgium, but is there a thirst on a local level to say, let's turn our attention to Belgium, let's experience Belgium rather than necessarily, you know, going out? I tell you why. Certainly in Australia, and I think in New Zealand it's the same, we've always been the kind of society that jumped on a plane at the drop of a hat and went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And now we're saying, let's rediscover our country.
Yeah.
Let's rediscover local stories and support local communities and discover what's here.
Yeah. Yeah, we see the same thing here. It's the European borders are opening up on June 15. Mm-hmm. So that's happening almost right now. So many people are thinking about going to neighboring countries, but there's the biggest percentage ever of people that just say, we're going to stay in Belgium this year. We're going to go to the coast, or we're going to discover some places we haven't been to for years. Yeah. And we're not allowed to travel outside of Europe, the European external border will be probably closed for a while. So we're all staying in Europe and rediscovering the beautiful sights that we have over here. And that's fine. I think a lot of people are actually looking forward to that as well.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And then we have the third level, John. We had the hands, the heart, and then we have number three.
Yeah, which is the heads. And that's the heads.
Yeah.
That's the digital smarts around okay. retail. You know, that is, and we've certainly experienced this with a lot of retailers too, where, you know, there's a need to accelerate the take-up of cloud-based business systems. Mm-hmm. There's the need to rapidly accelerate logistics around technology and advance digital smarts. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll give you a lot of retailers were caught out during COVID times because suddenly there was such a load on the system. You know, here in Australia, Amazon talked about it being Prime Day every day, and needing actually to change the merchandising on the site to encourage people to use the site less, because there was such demand. Kmart here, which is the local version of Kmart, and I saw this with a few retailers around the world, implemented a queuing system on their e-commerce site. So you'd jump onto kmart.com.au and not be able to enter the site. You'd be placed into a queue, mm-hmm. wait to actually access the site, which was very clunky from a consumer point of view. So I think, you know, that heads part, the part about digital smarts is about, you know, making sure very, very rapidly, if it's not already there, that you have the systems in place from a technology point of view, but also logistics to be able to handle demand and be able to scale as demand goes up.
Yeah, I fully agree with that one, and I've shared that a similar opinion with some local retailers in Europe, and they always push me back and say, okay, but budget plus capabilities. We don't have the budgets of the big companies, and we don't have the capabilities that we need and the resources to actually do this. We know that we need to do it, but it feels like we don't have the resources to do it. How do you react to that, John? Like, if you're a small retailer in a small town in Belgium or in the Netherlands or in Australia, how do you need to approach this?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I don't think it's a good enough excuse to say I don't have the budget. I think that you need to do what the best players do and think about customer first and think about it from a customer experience perspective, and then utilize available systems that are affordable. You know, if you can't afford to create your own custom site, well, you know, use one of the available technologies. I mean, mm-hmm. if you can't afford to go direct to consumer yourself, think about a brand shop on Amazon, for instance. Yeah. Think about using other people's infrastructure. But whatever you do, you can't just use as an excuse to say that I don't have the budget and I don't have the capability.
I agree. And I mean, there are many examples of small retailers that suddenly had very nice looking web shops here in Belgium, and from small communities that I don't know how they did it. Maybe their children helped them out. They figured out how to do it. Their teams that usually used to work in the store suddenly did the deliveries. So I think that you can be creative in times of need to make sure that it happens. But I also agree with you. We had the same thing here in Belgium, that some of our larger supermarkets couldn't handle the online demand and they had to shut it down for a few days. And then you think, oh my God, this is the largest opportunity ever to grow in digital, and you have to shut your digital store in times like these. That is so sad that has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you've just got to figure it out. Be creative, think laterally. I tell you one thing too is, I knew one of the original employees at Warby Parker, the glasses, manufacturer and retailer in the US.
Yeah.
Katie Hunt. And she always said that she had absolutely no idea what she was doing in the early days. None of them did, but they figured it out. And they did some really lateral things. Like, for instance, in order to figure out retail, they took a yellow school bus, you know, those American yellow school buses, and decked it out as a Warby Parker mobile store and took it on a road trip across the United States. They called it a class road trip, I think. And in doing that, in going to local communities across the United States, one, they got a lot of buzz about Warby Parker, and it was great from a visual point of view. But secondly, they actually worked out where the demand was in a very physical way by going out and with that mobile school bus. Mm-hmm. So I was always tickled by that because
it's a cool story.
Yeah, she didn't have the framework to say this is how it has to be done. She just looked at it laterally, had a go, and went out into the community, and then started to build a network of stores, and did it, as you well know, in a way that was uniquely Warby Parker.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story, and a beautiful brand. Huh? They're still doing really well, from what I see. Maybe a last question, John. You lived in the US. You now live in Australia. You spend a lot of time in Asia. My feeling is that the speed of evolution in almost everything we discussed today is much higher in Asia than in the Western part of the world. How do you look at this? Where do you see the real future that you described already happening at high pace today?
I think it's very definitely happening more in China than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen, and look, I'm no expert on Asia. I'm a big fan of companies like Alibaba and Tencent, of course, as we all are. And yeah. I think, they do have unique conditions in that country in terms of the scale of the market, in terms of privacy laws and so on, that enable you to do things that perhaps you can't do in other countries. But I'm always inspired by, in retail, the combination of commerce and entertainment and seamlessness that you get out of Asia, I think is really inspiring. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where I take my cues. I mean, not that you don't find interesting examples everywhere, but I think they're ahead of the curve personally.
Yeah, I agree. And you see same things in Singapore, I think is also a very fascinating city, country, where so much innovation is happening at high pace, and where a population is very open to adapt to it.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No, but I would love to thank you, John. I really love the insights that you shared. I could talk to you for hours and listen to your stories for hours. They always inspire me, and I'm sure that the people who will listen to this podcast will become huge fans of your work and your vision as well. So thank you so much for spending time with me and my listeners. I really appreciate that.
You're very kind, Stephen, and I'm a big fan of your work, and I was... I love spending the time with you. So, I hope to pick up this conversation again.
We'll do that. And once I'm back in Sydney, we'll catch up with a nice meal and some beers. I would love to do that.
Yeah, the emphasis on the beers.
Yeah. All right. Have a good day there, John.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye.